Connors.
May it please the court. The overarching question in this set of consolidated petitions for review is whether a rate that gives 100% of a overcollection to one set of ratepayers is unjust, unreasonable, or unduly discriminatory or preferential, and it gives a 0% to the other set of ratepayers, and in the system operator's words, PJM, that distribution is characterized as arbitrary. The commission, FERC, admits that it's not cost-based, and in PJM's words, the result is there is a, quote, windfall for the 100% recipients, the load-serving entities, which means the non-windfall, non-recipients, the petitioners, are subsidizing that windfall. We respectfully submit that that rate is unlawful. This court has said that there are two tests for when ratepayers are being treated disparately. The disparity must have a valid reason, and the disparity must be as small as practicable. Here, the disparity is as large as practical. Zero.
Depends on your perspective, doesn't it, a little bit?
Well, that goes to the other. Is there a valid reason for this disparity?
Yes. And PJM submitted a proposal to FERC, and FERC thought that was a reasonable way to resolve the matter, given some factors that FERC thought were important.
There were various proposals, and the one that was adopted by FERC is justified by FERC. The reason that they give to justify the 0-100% is they say that the load-serving entities who are getting all of the overcollection are entitled to all of that overcollection because they contribute to the fixed costs of the system.
And that's not the only reason. I mean, they're also saying it's an efficient way to signal price to the market, and it helps avoid market manipulation.
Well, it is certainly an efficient way to create the lower cost prices in the market to initially price with marginal cost pricing. We're not disputing that. The initial charge being marginal cost is fine. The question is, what is the fair way to distribute the overcollection?
No, I mean, I think the point is that if you go to a system that you're interested in, and which the allocation of the surplus has something to do with the amount of that you've paid for the transmission loss, introduces incentives that would both distort the price signal and also lead to market manipulation.
Well,
that's what FERC's saying. It's not.
Well, there's two issues.
Is that irrational? May not be the best approach, but is that an irrational one? And isn't that what we're supposed to be looking at? Only if that's an irrational reason?
Well, the test is rationality. Right. So question number one is, one articulated justification is we want to use marginal cost pricing because that sends efficient price signals.
Right.
So use marginal cost pricing. And then they don't want to dilute the price signal that they've initially said, so they say the one thing we can't do is send back to each individual ratepayer the amount that is actually owed to them, which is fine. Okay, we have this court has affirmed that. That's fine too.
Right, yeah.
But what you cannot do, this court has said, is you can't completely exclude a class who has paid into the overcollection. That's the Scythe case. And what you can do is what this court affirmed in Wisconsin Power and SMUD, the Sacramento case. You can organize it by geographical area.
Was that your proposal?
One of our proposals was it was equal to what happened in SMUD. In SMUD, it was megawatt hours, the amount of megawatt hours of purchased. If you did that in this case, that would be fine. That's what we proposed. But we purchase that too. They completely excluded us, which is Scythe says you cannot do. We pay in, like every physical trader, the same amounts.
Well, you don't. Not so when you do pay in for fixed costs, you do get a refund, correct?
We don't. There are the marginal. There are the line loss charges.
But the financial marketers who actually pay in for fixed costs, the up to congestion pricing, they do get a refund, correct?
No. The separate question for the up to congestion refunds is one portion of the total. There are the line loss charges, and then there are separate fixed cost contributions, which are transmission charges. They're separate charges. The up to congestion traders at one point were paying a reservation charge. So at one point, FERC was saying, we will give the up to congestion traders some portion of the overcollection because they pay a reservation charge. So they're contributing to the fixed costs of the system.
That's what I said. Yes. You said no, and then you repeated what I said, and you gave me the same answer I asked. I asked you, isn't it true that there are some financial marketers who get a refund because they contributed to fixed costs?
Currently, no, because currently there is no reservation charge that is imposed against
them. The order that we have before us, didn't it provide a refund in that circumstance?
And then they took it away.
That was the retroactive refund they took away.
They took away what they had received.
They'll get no refund in the future.
Correct, because they took away the reservation charge, so they don't pay into the fixed costs.
So they don't pay in at all anymore.
They don't. That's correct.
Why is it wrong to not give the refund to people who don't pay in?
Why is it wrong to support this distribution of the line loss over collection to people who do not pay fixed charges to the system?
What's wrong with allocating the overcharge
entirely to the people who pay a fixed cost charge?
Not to the people, but to the amount of the fixed charge, right?
To those who contribute to the fixed cost.
Yes, and then if you want to contribute to the fixed cost, then
right,
you can get a refund too, but
right,
you don't.
Right.
Right. What's wrong with that?
Because this charge, this line loss charge, is only charged on us in order to send the right pricing signals. We do not use the physical system.
If there weren't a physical system, would you make any money?
If there weren't a physical system,
you would have nothing in it. Basically, you're a betting operation. You're an arbitrage between day ahead and real time, and so you're a market for betting on. I'm just not saying that's a bad way, but that's what you're doing. You're betting on a real market. If there were no real market, you wouldn't make any money. There'd be nothing to bet on.
If there were no real market, then you wouldn't have financial marketers helping the rates stay low for all the ratepayers.
Right. So then you do get something out of the fact that there is a real market, a physical market, and you get something out of the fact that other people are paying fixed costs into that real market, because if they didn't, you would have nothing to bet on.
If there were no system and there were no trades and there was no electricity, then we would not be making money.
Right.
If the charge that is paid by those who are contributing to the fixed costs, that transmission charge, no one has argued that there's anything wrong with that charge, that it doesn't cover the actual costs of that fixed system. No one has said that's too high a charge. That charge pays for the fixed cost of the system to the people who are physically using the system. And no one has said that's a bad charge. The only reason those who are contributing, in addition to the transmission charge, are getting the return, the 100% return of the line loss charge, is because FERC has said we cannot give the individuals who have paid in the marginal line loss charge directly back individually as they paid into it, because then we'll lose the marginal cost signal. So therefore, we have to do something else. What else should we do? We're going to give it to the load-serving entities, not because they're paying too much for the fixed costs, but just because we like them. They pay the fixed costs to the charge. There is no cost connection. They say, in their words, that's the whole point. They don't want to have a cost connection between the line loss charge because they think that that would dilute the marginal cost pricing. But one of the problems is you completely dilute that marginal cost pricing if you give it all to the load-serving entities instead of distributing it in a fair way. That also dilutes the marginal cost pricing, because those people who are getting 100% of the over-collection are receiving too much. They know it. They know it's subsidized, so they know they don't pay the real marginal costs, and so the signal to them is being diluted. So this...
These are choices FERC has to make.
Yes, and it has to make...
You have to say, you started out by saying this rate is unlawful.
It is, yes, it is.
Unless you get 100% too, what FERC has done is unlawful.
We're not asking for 100%.
What are you asking
for? We're asking that we receive, we receive a fair share. We've given
and
them...
And FERC came up with the idea that if you contribute in some way, you can get a refund.
If you contribute, if you pay the transmission charge, we will give you all the over-collection from this separate charge for a different thing.
Yes, that's what they came up with.
And we're saying that there is no connection.
And
there's,
you're saying that's unlawful.
Because it's irrational. Because there's no cost basis connected between the payment.
Didn't we find that there was in Sacramento? Or am I misreading the Sacramento case? I thought we sort of visited this issue before, and Sacramento ruled that there was a cost.
Right, because it was per megawatt hour purchased. Here is per megawatt hour purchased, but only by the purchases of the load-serving entities, not the purchases of the virtual financial marketers. We are completely excluded, so this is precisely like the situation that was presented in Scythe. We pay in. FERC says...
What do you do with the argument that there's something about what the virtual marketers do that may be a little bit riskier than what others do in terms of market manipulation, right? Under your system, wouldn't there be incentives to churn and to gin up transactions to take advantage to grab more of the surplus than would otherwise be there? Isn't that a real concern?
Well, there are two responses to that. Number one is you don't throw out an entire innocent class because you think there may be bad apples. Number two is there are ways of having fair allocations that would address that, and one of which we proposed, which was 40% of the purchases and the overcollection come from the financial trades. 60% of them come from load-serving entities. So fine. Have a bucket of 40% of the overcollection and another bucket of 60% of the overcollections. We get pro rata of the 40%. And the load serving.
That may be a perfectly reasonable way to do it, but that doesn't mean that the solution that FERC has come up with is unreasonable. And that's what we're here to judge, right? Not which is better,
right?
But which is permissible, and what is impermissible about FERC saying we don't want to use the bucket system, the system we have in place, the system we've adopted, we think works better at efficiency and preventing market manipulation.
Well, just the 40% bucket would take care of that manipulation problem.
It would, but
okay,
they've found another way to take care of the manipulation problem.
But not to give us back any of the overcollection that we paid is not a cost-based, fair way to address the situation, because it is wrong to exclude an entire class from the overcollection. That's in Scythe. There was a party that paid into the overcollection, and then FERC approved a rate that allowed the distribution to go to reducing the scheduling charge. And Scythe said, we don't pay a scheduling charge because you don't charge us that because we engage in wholesale bilateral transactions. And this court said, you're right. There's no cost basis for this. FERC, you have not justified this. That's the exact same situation that we have here. We are on all fours with the Scythe situation where an entire class has been excluded, admittedly with no cost basis for doing so. And if there's no other questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay, thank you. We'll hear from FERC.
Stuck with the podium as it is.
So how is this not like Scythe? Would you address that argument?
Certainly, sir. First of all, in Scythe, it was about an overcharge, which this case is not about. But the main point in Scythe, which was decided back in 2002, was that the commission speculated that there was a rational basis for the marginal cost pricing without really explaining it. And the court on the last page of the decision says that cursory response will not do. At what point did the commission explain how the considerations applied? Why would a different method of refunds based more closely on cost causation jeopardize price signaling? Well, later in other cases that this court has seen, the commission did exactly that. And in SMUD, the court upheld the idea that in locational marginal pricing, the correct just and reasonable price, and that there is no cost causation problem because the overcollections don't go to particular customers. In SMUD, in fact, interestingly, it's on page 535 of the Fed Third Reporter. The court didn't deal with it in any detail, but it certainly said that the price customers are paying is the correct marginal cost, and we understand that the crediting for the loss over collection can't be tied to that because it would interfere with the economic system. And there it was done on a pro rata customer share. Interestingly, if you look at the underlying orders that are cited in that discussion, it's exactly the same as that this case. In fact, it cites the same order. It cites the Atlantic City order where PJM first came in and said, here's our proposal for a just and reasonable method for dealing with this, which we accepted.
I'm afraid I'm not exactly following. In Scythe, we made clear there were two different issues. One was whether locational marginal pricing was okay, and we didn't seem to have any problem with that. The issue in the case really was what to do about the refund, and that was what the cursory response was about. And in SMUD, the solution was, as opposing counsel points out, an offset of each megawatt hour purchase so that everyone who paid over got money back, one way or the other.
Well, actually, that's not exactly what happens in California. It was everyone in this SMUD case was the transmission customers, not virtual marketers.
Well, maybe, but the virtual marketers weren't before the court, so in SMUD, were they?
I believe they weren't, but I believe under the SMUD tariff, they don't get under the PJM.
But the question is, what did the court decide in SMUD? And in SMUD, the only issue was whether everyone who was paying in was getting some money out, and the court concluded close enough. They were close enough. Whether or not there were hidden financial marketers somewhere in SMUD, the court certainly didn't know about that and certainly didn't approve anything about that.
That's true, Your Honor. This is one step beyond the SMUD case in that in the California ISO turned back all the money to the for the overcollection to the transmission, which is what is being done here on a pro rata basis. The issue didn't come up about.
That's right. So you can't use SMUD to support you here. You understand why, right? You understand.
But the commission explained the principle that we put forth in SMUD and that you can see in the orders that SMUD affirmed is that whatever loss collection, over collection, crediting that the parties come up with, in order to be just and reasonable and keep the locational marginal price economic and meet the goals of locational marginal pricing, it can't go back into that market and affect the price because
But it can go back by offsetting the cost of each megawatt hour. That's what you.
Well, that would be.
So the question is why? What was the basis for not using that as the solution in this case?
Because in the earlier case when PJM came in and said, "Here's our proposal to how to do this. We understand that we can't let the overcollection go back into the sales market. We propose to send it, the overcollection, to those who pay the fixed cost of transmission."
Pause for 1 minute. What would be the problem with the SMUD solution in this case for the financial marketers as well. Apparently they do pay a megawatt hour charge, is that right?
To the extent that they pay the megawatt hours of the transmission, you're talking about transmission charges?
Yeah.
They said they pay the megawatt hours of the transmission charges, they get, under this tariff, they got the credit.
But they only get the credit for contribution of fixed costs. Is that
right.
What that is?
Yes.
So you're saying that what was approved, well, then I'm confused.
Okay, in Atlantic City.
The opposing counsel says what they proposed was payback based on the megawatt hours purchased, and that's not what the refund mechanism in this case is. Are you telling me that is what the refund mechanism in this case is?
Well, I'm not sure what Ms. Congress was talking about. If she's talking about it going to fixed costs, we have no problem with that. If she's talking about it going to financial marketers who are not paying fixed costs, the commission rejected that. But you have to look at the context of the situation. The PJM came in and said, we have this, is an earlier, before this complaint, came in and said, look, we have this overcollection. Here's what we propose to do with it. We understand, and this commission has said, and this court has agreed, that it makes sense economically. You don't put it back into the sales market. You have to divorce it from that to keep the locational marginal price right. So everybody who's paying and receiving the locational marginal price is getting the correct, just and reasonable price for energy. So PJM said, okay, well, we'll give the overcollection to those who pay transmission costs, the fixed costs of the transmission grid. And the commission accepted that as just and reasonable. Yes, there are other possible just and reasonable ways to do it, but the commission accepted that as just and reasonable. Then the complainants come in, and the financial marketers came in and said, under 206, that's not fair. But the commission found they didn't meet their burden in showing that PJM's allocation.
What was their proposal?
Well, they made several proposals. I mean, there were a lot of paper filed, and they proposed that they would get a share of the line losses, regardless of whether.
Based on what?
Based on, I think, just based on their participation in the sales market, which is incorrect in terms of the economic theory.
Well, again, this may require another back and forth. Let me just say again, why couldn't the solution that was provided in SMUD be provided to them? The refund remedy in SMUD, why couldn't that have been provided to them?
Well, the refund remedy in SMUD, it's true the financial marketers weren't in the case, and so nobody was thinking about them. And
but with respect to the parties who were in the case in SMUD, they paid locational marginal pricing in, right?
Right.
And they got something back, right?
But they were as transmission customers.
Whatever. They got something back. What did they get back?
They got back a percentage of their percentage of the
per megawatt hour.
Per megawatt hour, okay, of the overallocation.
And now these guys also pay in. Why couldn't they get back the per megawatt hour? If the per megawatt hour refund didn't mess up the locational marginal pricing theory for the transmission customers in SMUD, why would it mess it up for the financial marketers here?
But because the transmission market and the sales market are completely separate. Transmission is run on a cost of service basis. And it has nothing to do with the power sales market that the financial marketers.
I understand that, but that still doesn't answer. I understand they're different. I just want to know why giving them a similar refund mechanism would mess up locational pricing.
Well, the commission found that, first of all, as Judge Griffith pointed out, the financial marketers were in a slightly different situation and not situated the same as the load serving utilities. We say load serving utilities, we mean of course the utilities are paying running the system that delivers electricity to homes and businesses, and they participate in the buy sell market, but they basically buy energy. And as the commission pointed out in one of the orders, only the financial marketers could buy and sell. Generators are in the market, who, by the way.
Still isn't answering my question. Your argument is that if they got the same refund mechanism that would mess up the pricing signals of the locational marginal pricing, and I'm not hearing why that would be.
Let's look at it from this. Maybe this will answer your question. This is under the Federal Power Act, if somebody comes in with a reasonable, just and reasonable cost allocation system, like we said PJM did here, we approve it. And PJM said, we understand we want to keep the costs of the over-collection costs separate from the market, and therefore we propose giving it solely to those in the transmission market who pay the fixed cost of the transmission. Okay, that was never appealed. Then financial marketers came in and said, well, we want another system. And conceivably there is another system that's just and reasonable that could include them. But That's not the way the Federal Power Act works.
No, I understand that. So you have no answer, though, for why, and FERC gave no answer for why their proposal would not mess up the signaling.
Well, I think FERC did give an answer. I think that the transmission owners, that those in the transmission, they do participate in this market, but getting back the costs based on, because they pay the fixed cost, is completely separate from what goes on in the power market.
Are the transmission customers in SMUD the same as those who, in this case, we say are paying towards fixed costs, or is it?
Yes, as Judge Bowen said, you can't tell that from the case, but if you look at the tariff, it's transmission customers. They weren't financial marketers. And the financial marketers under that tariff, in fact, don't get a line loss over collection.
Are you saying that this method of paying back fixed costs is an improvement over the refund method that was approved in SMUD? In the sense?
I think it's exactly the same. It's just that there was no discussion about financial marketers. There were arguments made why you're giving too much to one party and too much to another. And we were giving it to all transmission
customers. Is the measure of the refund of fixed costs then simply based on megawatt hours? Is that?
In other words, it's not a refund. Maybe that's what's the confusing part. It's not a refund. There's a line loss over collection. So there's a surplus.
It's a payment of the over.
The question is what to do with that.
I understand that. Okay, I'm using refund in a more generic sense.
Right, but remember, refund.
I understand, so, but I'm not trying to confuse you, and you're obviously not confused, so we're okay
at
this. Yeah. So, but what I'm asking is, was the method of the allocation of the over-collection in SMUD different from the method of the allocation of the over-collection here?
No.
It's identical.
Yes. But it didn't go to financial marketers. That issue wasn't reached.
But the measure of contribution to fixed costs is the same.
Yes. Everybody assumed in SMUD, and what I understand of the California ISO tariff, those who regulate that, I spoke to them, financial marketers do not get part of the overcollection under that tariff. This was strictly about transmission, people paying transmission costs and getting back transmission.
But there has to be an explanation for... So, but the method by which they're getting the contribution of fixed costs back is based on how much they're paying for what?
The measure is their proportionate share of the line loss over collection. That's the measure. But they only get it to the extent that they are paying fixed costs in the transmission
system. And how are fixed costs measured? So how much does any particular company get back? How do you measure that based on?
Well, I think it depends on what their transmission, how much they're paying for transmission, and what the amount of the use of the system, of the transmission system is. There are transmission access charges that go into this and distance charges. So it's completely divorced from the power sales market. Again,
let me just to be clear. Do the financial marketers here pay some cost of each megawatt hour purchased?
They pay the locational marginal cost. That's the correct cost. They buy the locational marginal price. They sell at the locational marginal price, just like utilities and generators.
So the question I have then, so in the SMUD case at 535, yeah. They're just describing the way, and the ISO proposed to credit excess revenues back to load-serving entities on a pro-rata basis by reducing the cost of each megawatt-hour purchase.
Right, but to load-serving entities.
I understand, but you could credit the excess to the marketers by reducing the cost of each megawatt-hour purchased also, could you not? Is that not?
I don't think so.
Why? That's what I wanted to know.
Because you can't have a system. And this court has recognized this. In locational marginal pricing, that's the correct price. If you tie the loss over collection to
they did do that in that case for the.
They said pro rata share of the excess revenues.
Yeah, could you do the same thing for the financial marketers here without interfering with locational marginal?
Theoretically. Perhaps, but the fact is that doesn't, even if there's another just and reasonable way to divvy this up, doesn't mean this is not just
that's
and reasonable.
That's true. So, but
there's no discrimination.
Well, that's the question.
Why isn't
the fact that this seemed to be ignoring some people who are actually paying costs. And so that it seems to violate the cost causation principle.
The notion of that the theory meets cost causation regardless of who gets the refund and whether any particular customer is entitled to a refund, I believe, was decided in Sacramento. The discrimination issue is something slightly different. And here the commission dealt with the discrimination issue because in the original PJM Atlantic City case, PJM came up with what we found was just and reasonable. Nobody complained about that. It wasn't appealed. Then financial marketers came in and said, this is not fair. And then they had the burden to show that it was unjust and unreasonable. And under 206, they couldn't meet that burden. It was essentially, to some extent, a collateral attack on the original order. But they said, well, it's no fair to just allocate it to those who pay fixed costs. And the commission said, well, it is no fair to this extent. To the extent you pay fixed costs, you are included. But if you don't pay fixed costs, we've already said it's just and reasonable to do it this way. And you haven't proved that it's not just and reasonable to say that this is one reasonable way, and there could be others, and there could be others that include financial marketers. This is one reasonable way to allocate the line loss over collection in a way that won't interfere with the locational marginal price. The commission said there are other possibilities. I mean, petitioners suggest, well, under FERC's theory, PJM could have a big party, which, you know, sounds like fun, but the commission's obviously not dealing in abstract economic principles.
I wonder whether you're not overstating the benefit that the commission gets from picking one solution over another and saying, well, okay, maybe there's another good solution out there, but that doesn't solve the problem. At the end of the key paragraph in Scythe, we say, at no point did the commission explain how these considerations apply. Why, we wonder, would a different method of refunds based more closely on cost causation principles jeopardize desirable price signaling or be infeasible?
When you look above that, well, first of all, there was an overcharge. No one's being overcharged here. So that's one difference. Scythe was about an overcharge. So it was not a just and reasonable rate. But then when you get back to the actual discussion of price signals, it says FERC's response on rehearing was merely to say efficient price signals, infeasible, unending controversy. Since then, we've explained in
But what you're not explaining, and even in oral argument, you are not explaining why the alternative that they proposed wouldn't would not more closely be based on cost causation principles and would not jeopardize desirable price signaling. You're not explaining why their alternative, and neither did FERC explain why their alternative wasn't better.
Well, it's not, for one reason, it's not better, is because there was a concern by FERC, and this is in the orders, and we talked about it in the brief, that unlike load-serving utilities who are constrained by having to get their load functioning, to have to get the electricity to the customers, they buy electricity to get it to the customers. Generators are selling electricity, generally, and utilities are buying it because of the particular nature of the arbitrageurs. They buy and sell. So they're in a position to jack up the volume because they're not constrained by real world situations. And so they are in a completely different position. So there's a chance of market manipulation. We're not saying they're bad people or anything wrong with what they're doing, but they are in a different position from the load serving entities.
Let me just
that's one reason.
Okay. Can't the load-serving entities engage in market manipulation?
I mean, theoretically, but they don't buy and sell in the sales market. Each the financial marketers, each transaction is a buy and a sell. So load-serving
increases the opportunities for manipulation. You're saying, by
it's just certainly they have a better opportunity is what the commission found, whereas load-serving entities, the utilities have to. Their main concern is getting the electricity to their customers. So they don't have the leeway, and they're not buying and selling the same transaction.
Just one other thing I wasn't clear about. You said that Scythe involved an overcharge. This case doesn't. Perhaps I'm not understanding. Scythe seems to describe the overcharge as being caused by the same thing causing it in this case, namely overcollection, because of using the last megawatt hour of energy. That's what led to the overcollection, which Scythe seems to describe as an overcharge. What's different in this case than that case?
Well, as I think Ms. Connors admitted, they agree, financial marketers agree, they're paying the just and reasonable price for electricity.
Oh, but maybe the just and reasonable charge, because we've said that locational market pricing is okay, but the description in Scythe, what they call the overcharge, is the total that everybody pays, which is more than the actual cost due to the fact that you have an efficient pricing mechanism. Is it any different? When you say there's
It's not more than the cost. The whole point of locational marginal pricing is the locational marginal price has three elements.
I'm not asking that question. I understand. What I'm saying is what's different about the thing called an overcharge in Scythe and what we have here?
Well, at this point, the court has recognized that a locational marginal price is not an overcharge.
Ah, so you just don't like the word. Overcollection, then? The same thing, though, right? More money is being taken in because you're charging everybody for the last mile.
Yes, but in Scythe, if you look at the material that the court was dealing with, it was early in the development of that whole idea of locational marginal pricing, and it wasn't explained. It was just mentioned. Since then, in Wisconsin and in Sacramento, this court has okayed locational marginal pricing, and this court has recognized that an overcollection of losses is part of that. So then the question becomes, what do you do with the overcollection? And the commission found in the case before this that PJM's proposal to allocate the overcollection solely to those who paid the fixed cost of the grid was reasonable, it was tied to the Federal Power Act purposes, but it didn't interfere with the market. Financial marketers then came in and said they had the burden of saying that was unjust and unreasonable. And the commission found it wasn't unjust and reasonable. You were paying financial marketers, you're paying the just and reasonable price. The overcollection doesn't belong to anybody in particular. The overcollection, in fact, commission suggested it could be reasonable for PGM to defray administrative costs, and nobody would get it. But the but we accepted PJM's proposal as just and reasonable, which is our obligation under this Federal Power Act, if a proposal is just and reasonable. And then we had a complaint saying, oh, no, it's not, because we don't get part of the overcollections. But we'd already established nobody was entitled to any of the overcollections. And the reason there was no discrimination was, to the extent PJM had said, anybody who contributes to fixed costs gets overcollection. And the commission straightened that out in these orders and said, to the extent that the financial marketers paid fixed costs, yes, they are entitled to overcollections. So that was the discrimination issue, and that was solved.
When the commission made this distinction, made this decision to limit the allocation to those who had paid fixed costs of the grid, at that point in time, did they know that that was cutting out most of the could that be just another way of identifying the virtual marketers here?
Well, PJM, I mean, the virtual marketers participate in PJM. They're PJM stakeholders. It was a PJM case. The stakeholders all knew about it. I don't know why the virtual market. I mean, I think some of them did participate.
But they're the only class that gets cut out here, right?
No, generators don't. Generators don't.
Okay.
The generators are an entire class that operates in the market that don't get don't get overcollection for surplus.
Further questions?
So there, no further questions? Thank you.
Is there any time remaining? All right, we'll give you 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Generators don't pay the line loss charge in the first instance. We're the only ones being excluded. We pay the exact same amount for the line loss charges as the physical load-serving entities. There's no contribution to fixed costs that load is paying in the line loss charge that we're not paying. They're exactly the same. This is exactly like Scythe over-collection. This is the same situation where there's an over-collection. And what this court said in SMUD was that, quote, no customer is less deserving than another of being treated as the marginal customer. Therefore, no customer is entitled to demand a refund greater than its pro rata share of the excess revenues collected. That is exactly right. Because you don't know who the last marginal cost customer is, no one is entitled to more than pro rata. But what's happening here is we get nothing. We don't get any pro rata.
Tell me again what your proposal was for how to deal with the overcollection and where I can find it.
If you look at our request for our original complaint.
Is it in the joint appendix?
The original complaint, yes. The way that the tariff is reciting now is it says it's per megawatt hour going to load and load serving entities. And we said what you need to do is just not limit it to load and load serving entities. Just don't exclude us. Anything you do is fine, just don't exclude us. I think it's at page one of our complaint, but and I think it gets more specific later in the request for a hearing, and then we make other proposals in our second complaint as to other options.
Was there any place where FERC addressed that proposal?
FERC said, the response to FERC was that, by FERC was, you can be totally excluded because you do not contribute to the fixed cost of the system through the, in FERC's counsel's repeated words, divorced, utterly separate, paid by actual cost of service transmission charge. They said, because you pay this completely separate charge based on the cost of serving you, we're going to give you all the overcollection from this other charge that both load and the financial marketers pay equally.
So, what about the procedural argument that you're coming in on a Section 206 complaint?
That puts the burden on us to show that
Does
there is.
Does the FERC do anything but what you've done? that doesn't exclude us. And FERC says, right, well, we've already found that this is a just and reasonable way to proceed, and you haven't shown that this distinction we're making is irrational.
That's right, and we're saying this.
If any of your, the people who are in the same type of business you're in, do contribute, then they will get part of the surplus.
There was no financial market in the.
Well, you admitted when you were first up here that they got it, and then FERC took it away.
That's the up to congestion trades, yes.
Right. So that was FERC's response.
That was one of FERC's responses, was that we will give a portion of this to the people
to the grid, then you will get some of the
in a separate charge that's unrelated to the line loss charge, with no cost basis association with the line loss charge. When you're talking about an overcollection from a charge, we respectfully submit that there has to be a fair allocation of that overcollection.
What I'm trying to understand here is, and I thought counsel for FERC was getting at this with the discussion with the chief judge, that this is not a surplus, that this is an amount of money that results from a change in the way you measure. And the question is, what do you do with this surplus?
Well,
and so they came up with the notion that give it back to those who contribute to the fixed costs of the grid, since everybody relies on that. And if your members contribute, then you'll get some too.
Well, and we may be getting to the heart of the problem here, which may be semantic, as the chief judge was, I think, pointing out. One of the posits of FERC is that everyone is fair to pay marginal costs, and therefore
everyone is fair.
Fairly priced. Marginal cost is
right.
A fair price for everyone.
Right.
So
it says you've acknowledged that, and we've upheld it, so that's the
end. It is fair to charge everyone marginal cost prices as the initial charge to send the right price signals.
Right.
But that doesn't mean when you have an overcollection, which you will do.
You call it an overcollection, but it's not an overcollection in the sense that you paid too much.
Yes, it is. Because ultimately what
FERC says, that's it isn't.
Well,
that's what I just need to be clear.
Yes, because what happens is you charge for your marginal costs, and then it turns out, because you overcollect, those weren't your actual costs.
I have an accounting method A, and then I switch to accounting method B, and accounting method B comes up with a surplus showing that using this new accounting method, I didn't have to pay all this that I paid under accounting method A. It's not that I was overcharged under accounting method A or B, but there's this surplus out there, and the question is, what should be done with it?
Well, it's not a switch in accounting methods. It's using
this is my hypothetical. I'm just trying to get it
okay.
Clear that it's not as though you were overcharged. That's what I'm trying to get at. And then FERC comes along and says, PJM has proposed this method of distribution. We think it's fair and just. There's no appeal. So the burden is on you under 206, as you acknowledge, to show that it's unfair and unjust. And FERC comes out and says, well, you're not in the same position. You're not similarly situated to the people who are getting, the entities that are getting this surplus back. And you say it's unfair.
Well, we're saying we are similarly situated in the relevant aspects of this case, which is how should this.
Everybody paid under accounting method A.
Yes.
And if accounting method B had been in place from the beginning, nobody would have paid as much.
Correct.
But under accounting method A, what you were paying was a fair and just rate.
Under accounting method A, the right price signals are being sent through the initial marginal cost pricing, but it doesn't.
You want to change my hypothetical. See, well, I'm trying to keep it clean because I think this is my understanding of where the confusion is in this discussion. And maybe I'm wrong, but I need to be clear about this, that this isn't as though FERC decided, oh, dear, you know, the rate was unjust and everybody was being overcharged, so you ought to get back the amount of your overcharge. Rather, this is moving from accounting method A, where you were paying a fair and just rate, to accounting method B, where under accounting method B, you would not have paid as much. But there's this surplus, and what do we do with it? But it's not a question of paying you back because you were overcharged. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Well, and again, this may be semantic. When you use accounting method A, the marginal cost accounting method, it will always create a surplus.
For everyone?
Yes.
Overcharged for every
single buyer? Yes. And you don't know who is the one who's the marginal cost of the last unit.
You don't know. How do you know that it's for every buyer?
Well, you're
obviously
correct.
It's for some buyers and not
yes.
others.
Yes, and you don't know who the marginal cost is.
You don't know that your people are the ones who are overpaying them.
Right. Well, you don't know who until you can clear it out and find out who the actual costs are. You can do that. You can then say
that's not a proposal.
That's what they switched to. They switched from actual costs to marginal cost pricing.
And counsel, aren't you discounting that the virtual marketers are a very different type of player in this market, and that FERC has determined is that there are characteristics of the virtual marketers that justify treating them differently in terms of the surplus allocation, right?
That's what they say. So what?
That's not true.
It is not correct because what is this characteristic that makes us different for the purposes of deciding whether we get any share of the overcollection? We pay exactly the same amounts for our purchases under the line loss charge have to look exactly like the physical transactions, because otherwise the marginal cost pricing doesn't work. So we have to pay in exactly
like
that.
Aren't you different in terms of what Mr. Super said, that you're buyers and sellers in this market, and that creates different sorts of incentives?
Well, there may be the different incentive appeared that the only one they've articulated in passing is that there is a potential for market manipulation, right, which could be greater. And the response to that is you deal with the market manipulation. You know, there are load can market manipulate and use market power and do lots of bad things. We don't say, therefore, we're going to have no load. You address the problem. There are ways of addressing the problem without condemning an entire class of innocent people who have paid into this fund and saying, you get nothing back because one of you may do something bad, especially when you can create a response that avoids it.
That's not the record here. Wasn't just one.
There is no record. There's no record of any market manipulation whatsoever here.
September orders.
It's sheer speculation. There's nothing. There's a hypothetical.
Speculation, but FERC made these determinations.
Based on speculation, which it can't do. It said you could potentially, there could be some market manipulation. There's no record of market manipulation by anyone.
What I'm trying to get at is we have deferred to the expert agencies' prediction about what may happen under a certain set of circumstances.
And
so they said, I thought what Judge Griffith was trying to get at is, you're just not the same kind of player.
Well, there are people who are not the same type of people in different ways. The question is it
right,
a rational basis?
Right.
White people look different than black people. That they have a difference in color. That doesn't mean you can treat them disparately. There has to be a rational basis for the disparate treatment.
Actually, more than a rational basis.
Exactly. I was going to say, where'd you get that one?
We would settle for a rational basis, Your Honor.
The problem of focusing on FERC cases too much.
Yes. And the problem here in the end is the complete disconnect. And we're not the ones that they admit this disconnect. FERC counsel said, absolutely separate twice, and then he said, divorced. This charge is completely different than that charge. That is our precise point.
Okay.
Thank you.
Questions? Take the matter under submission. Thank you.